Perek Lamed Gimel. We're holding in the middle of the Perek, speaking about the topic of Tchias Mesim. Be'ezer Hashem, this week, we said like last week, we're not going to go weiter. We're just going to talk about the idea of Tchias Mesim, the resurrection of the dead, in general terms, and a few ideas that have to do with Tchias Mesim, especially in light of Purim, because Purim is coming up this week, so we're going to speak about that. So you can close your Perek Devlez if you want. I didn't even bring one. The first idea is what? Stop. The first idea is like this. What's the connection over here? The Maral in Tiferes Yisrael in Perek Nun Gimel, the Maral says that the Purim is the Yom Tov of Tchias Mesim. What does that mean? The Purim is the Yom Tov of Tchias Mesim. So the Maral explains, this Chazal tell us, that Kol HaMoyadim is suddenly bottle chutz be Purim. All the Yom Tovim in the future are going to be rendered obsolete, except for Purim. And then it says, Yesh Amrim also Yom Kippur. So Purim and maybe Yom Kippur are the exception, are the only ones that are going to remain, the only Yom Tovim that are going to remain lost and lovely at some point in the future. That's what the Chazal tell us. So the Maral says, what's so special about Purim and Yom Kippur that they're the only ones that are going to remain? So Maral explains like this. La'asid lovay, in the future, what's going to happen is that when Yimayisa Mashiach, so all the people who are dead are going to come back to life. Tchias Mesim. So Maral explains that the idea of Tchias Mesim is something that we can only relate to, let's say, nowadays, through the idea of Purim and perhaps Yom Kippur. Those are the only Yom Tovim which relate to the idea of Tchias Mesim. When you talk about, the Maral doesn't speak at this point, but like when you talk about the other Yom Tovim, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, which represent, you know, going out of Mitzrayim, or represent, you know, Kabbalah Sotirah. So those things, you know, we could already feel those ideas sort of in our world over here where we are now. But the idea of Tchias Mesim is going to be especially brought out by the idea of Purim, by the concept of Purim. Where do we see that? The idea of Tchias Mesim, as we said, is if someone is dead, he's gone, he's not alive anymore, and then Hashem gives him a special Tchias Mesim, he comes back to life. So that's the idea of Purim. Purim was, there was a Gzera on the Jews, they're going to die, and that's it, nothing to do. And then Hashem was Mevatel the Gzera and reversed that death and made it that, no, now they're going to live, they came back to life. That's what the idea of Purim is. And it's the same thing, Yom Kippur, on a different level. On, let's say, a more metaphysical, on a spiritual level, the Yom Kippur, a person has a gzer, you know, Hashem decreed in Rosh Hashanah, this is going to happen to the guy. This guy did a virus, he's going to die. Hashem is killing this guy this year. That's a gzer. Then Yom Kippur comes and he gets atoned for his virus. Does tshuva, he gets atonement, and the virus gets cleaned, and then that gzer that said he's going to die is overturned, and now it's like as if he came back to life. So that's why Purim and Yom Kippur have to do with Tchias Mesim. That's what the Maral explains in Tiferes Yisrael, Perek Nun Gimel, to explain the idea of Tchias Mesim, and he says that's kashur in specific to the Yom Tov of Purim. We're going to speak about a few different general ideas about Tchias Mesim. As I mentioned last week, the Mabit in the Sefer Beis Elikim, the Mabit is with Moshe ben Yosef of Trani. He lived in Tzfas in the same time as the Beis Yosef, as the author of the Shulchan Aruch. And they, you know, they argued with each other and stuff. So he's like, he's on that level, you know, he used to sit on the, well, he sat on the Beis Din in Tzfas. He was actually the head of the Beis Din in Tzfas after Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, died. So he was there for 5 years after the Shulchan Aruch died. He was the one who took over. So he has a few svarim. Charles Tshuvas Mabit, he wrote Charles Tshuvas, and he wrote a sefer called Kiryas Sefer, which is on the Rambam, on the whole Rambam. He wrote Kiryas Sefer, and he wrote, what else did he write? He wrote a Pirush on Perek Shira. He wrote a sefer called Basilik, which is more or less, it has three sections. One is about Tshuva, one is about Tefillah, and the third section is about the 13 Ikarim of the Rambam, and he goes in great detail and discusses all these Ikarim, brings proofs and questions and answers, and explains it better, etc. So that's it's called Shar HaYisoidis in Beis Elikim. So Beis Elikim is Shar HaYisoidis more or less from Perek Nun Dalet, maybe Nun Gimel. Perek Nun Gimel, all the way to Perek Samach Beis, the Marbit speaks all about Tchias Amesim and different ideas about Tchias Amesim. So we'll take out a few of his ideas. One of them is like this. The Marbit in Shari Yusaydis in Perek Nun Hei says, a chibish. I'll read it out to you. Towards the end of the Perek, in Perek Nun Hei, he says, Uvapirish Tehillim, and it's written in a certain commentary on Tehillim, Kosov al Darcha Kabbalah, which is written al Pi Kabbalah. Al Dovkal offer Nafshi Chayani Kidvoracha, it's a pasuk in Tehillim. Actually, we know what this Pirish is. It's called Kafak Teres. It's a Kabbalistic commentary to Tehillim, which exists in manuscript form, was never printed. They have it in the manuscript of it exists in the library in Paris. So it says, so the Mabit is quoting this commentary, and he says, Kiseder HaTchia, the order of the resurrection of Tchias HaMesim, Tihia B'Seder Oises HaAlpha Beta. It's going to be in the order of the Aleph Beis. Mi Shishmoi Masla Ba'Aleph Yichia Tchila. Whoever's name starts with the Aleph, he's going to come back to life first. V'imkein Adam Rishon Yihia Rishon. Therefore, Adam Rishon is going to be the first person to come back. Uven Avraham Rishon La'Avis. And Avraham Avinu is going to be the first of the Avis. It is in each generation that's going to come back to life, that's how it's going to be, but not one generation before the other. So basically, the Mabit is saying a chiddush that the way that Tchias HaMesim is going to be is it's going to be in alphabetical order. If your name starts with the Aleph, so first everyone, you know, like when they're boarding the airplane or something, right? So for everyone whose last name starts with the Aleph, you go first. And then everyone whose last name starts with the Beis, then you go first, etc., etc., etc. Right? So he says, the Mabit says that the order of Tchias HaMesim is going to be in alphabetical order from your name. That's one chiddush. Then he says another chiddush is that the Efsher, maybe the way it's going to work is that Hashem is going to do it in terms of generations. Like, let's say the first generation of humans, okay? So then they're going to come Tchias HaMesim in alphabetical order. Then the second generation, alphabetical order. Third generation, alphabetical order. But not that one person, a guy named Avram, you know, who lived 500 years before somebody named Tzadik, right? 500 years after someone named Tzadik. So the guy named Tzadik is going to come back first, even though he starts with a Tzadik. And then Avram, even though he starts with an Aleph, because he lived 500 years later. It's a different generation. So it's going to go first by generations, and then by alphabetical order. That's a chiddush that the Mabit says about Tchias HaMesim.
It says, you know, how long does it take to go from A to from Aleph to Tav to Pesach?
Oh, we don't know how long it is going to be. Let's say between each act of Tchias HaMesim or something like that. I don't know, but he's saying that there's going to be some sort of order. It might say, I found that the Yad Ramah in Maseches Sanhedrin of Tzadik Beis and Aleph, he writes that no, the order of Tchias HaMesim is going to go al pi how many merits do you have? How much schus do you have? So the person who's like the biggest tzaddikim are going to come back to life first, and then the people who are a little bit less, then a little bit less, a little bit less, a little bit less. And it doesn't matter what your name is, and it doesn't have to do with Aleph Beis. But the Mabit says it has to do with Aleph Beis. And there's a Gishmak of Vart from the Aptarov, the Oyev Yisrael, based on this. He doesn't quote the Mabit, but he means that he's referring to this idea from the Mabit. Basically, there's a Targum, it says in the Pasuk in Parshas Shlach, it says, Vayikra Moshe, Lehoshea ben Nun, Yehoshua. Moshe ben Nun gave the name of Hoshea ben Nun, he called him Yehoshua. Right? So he added a Yud to the beginning of Hoshea ben Nun to make him Yehoshua ben Nun. Right? So the Targum Yenison on that Pasuk, when it's translating it, so it adds another thing that we don't see in the Pasuk. It says that Moshe ben Nun looked at Hoshea ben Nun, and he saw that he's Anav, and therefore he added a Yud to his name, he called him Yehoshua. That's what it says in Targum Yenison. It says that Moshe saw that he was an Anav, and therefore he called him Yeshua. So the question is, why is the fact that he was an Anav, what does that have to do with him being called Yeshua? He's an Anav, so fine, but that let's say Rashi says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu add a Yud to Yeshua's name? Because Ko Yeshiacha from the Atzas Meraglim, Hashem will help him give a certain Siyat Deshmaya that he won't say like the other spies when he was going out on the mission. But what does that have to do with being an Anav? Why is Targum Yenison saying that it has to do with the Anav? So the Apter Rav says like this. Because we know that Tchias HaMesim is going to go in alphabetical order. Right? Like the Mabit said. And if it goes in alphabetical order, so if let's say his name now is Hoshea ben Nun. It starts with a Hey. So that's like his order, you know, Alpes Gimodalat Hey. So he is number five in the pecking order, right? Of Tchias HaMetzah. He's number five. Now, if Moshe Rabbeinu adds a Yud at the beginning of his name, he's going to be number 10, right? So, you know, maybe, you know, it's not so nice to add a Yud at the beginning of his name because you're making his Tchias HaMetzah come later. So the Abdur Rab says that Moshe Rabbeinu said he was the Anav and he wouldn't care about such things that you go before me, I get before you. It doesn't matter to him. So therefore he was able to add a Yud to his name. That's a word from the Abdur Rab.
Based on the
Targum Innocent and the Mabit. Another Nekuda, what? Yeah, another thing that the Abdur Rab says to be masked by this Targum Innocent, Agav, I'm just meant, this doesn't have to do with Tchias HaMetzah, but it has to do with this past Shabbos and Parsha. We said the Aruch Chaim in Parshas Kisisa says in the end of Parshas Kisisa, it says that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, so it says that he had Koran or Pnei Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu had these karnei or, there's like horns of light that were coming, that were emanating from his face, from his head. Right? So what were these horns of light? Where did these horns of light come from? So Aruch Chaim, the famous Aruch Chaim in Parshas Kisisa, says a vart that when Moshe Rabbeinu was writing the Sefer Torah in Shemayim, so Hashem gave him exactly the amount of ink, of dio he needed to write the entire Sefer Torah. Right? But what happened was that Moshe Rabbeinu was a big anav. And because he was an anav, so we find different things that Moshe Rabbeinu did when writing the Sefer Torah because he was an anav. One nekuda is that he when he wrote the word in the pasuk in Parshas Baha'aleischa, it says that Moshe was the anav mikol adam. Right? So the word anav, he took out the yud. Anav was supposed to be spelled ayin nun yud vav. Moshe Rabbeinu spelled it ayin nun vav. He took out the yud of the word anav. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu take out the yud from the word anav? Because he was anav. And he didn't want to write that he was anav because it was anav. So he took out the yud. Right? Another word that they say, the Baal Turim says at the beginning of Parshas Vayikra, that because Moshe Rabbeinu was the anav, so when it says Vayikra al Moshe, in the beginning of Vayikra, so Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to write the word Vayikra straight out, because then it would be like, oh, Hashem's calling to Moshe. It was too big of an anav to let that be. So instead he wrote the word, the Aleph, little. He wrote it smaller. Right? So because of these different things, so the Aruch Chaim says that there was extra ink from the ink that Hashem gave Moshe Rabbeinu to write the Sefer Torah. Because there was a little aleph, or there was a missing yud in the word anav, right? So there was extra ink. So what happened to that ink? So the Aruch Chaim says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took that ink and smeared it on his forehead, and from that's where the karnei hoyd came from. The rays of light that came from Moshe Rabbeinu's face came because of that extra ink that Hashem smeared him that was left over because he was an anav. That's what the Aruch Chaim says. So based on that, the Abdur Rav wants to explain that in Parshas Pinchas, when Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu to pick Yeshua as his successor, so it says in the pasuk, "Menasata mehoidcha alav," put from your splendor, from your glory, onto Yeshua. So what's that mehoidcha? So the Abdur Rav says that it's talking about those karnei hoid, the rays of light that came from Moshe Rabbeinu. That where did those rays of light come from? So he said it comes from that yud of the word anav that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't write. It came from, and so that's the karnei hoid of Moshe Rabbeinu, from that yud. So Hashem is saying, "Satam yehoidcha alav," give from your hoid onto Yeshua, means to give him an extra yud. Take that yud and give it to Yeshua. So that's why Moshe Rabbeinu gave Yeshua, it says, "Vayikra Moshe l'Hashem ben Yeshua," he added a yud to the beginning of his name, because he saw that he was the anav. That's what the Targum Innocent said. Right? He said that he saw he was the anav, so he added a yud. So that yud was the yud that Moshe Rabbeinu left over from the word anav that he didn't read because he himself was an anav. So therefore, he gave it over to Yeshua. Hashem told him to give over the height to Yeshua. And that's another part from the Abdur Rav on why he only called him Yehoshua because he saw he was the anav. Right, I got it. Okay, another nekuda is like this. The Mabit in Perek Nun Gimel, when he's talking about Tchias HaMetzah, so he speaks about three reasons why the idea of Tchias HaMetzah exists. So Mabit says three reasons. He says the first reason is because it gives a person a chance to fulfill the mitzvahs that he wouldn't have been able to do in his lifetime. personal, the way the world works, you can't do everything, even whatever you want to do, you're not able to fulfill it. So then, before a person dies, right, so then it doesn't work out. But Hashem wants to give a person a chance to do what he wanted to do, so therefore, even after he died, he comes back to life, and that way, he could be Mekayim those mitzvahs that he wasn't able to do. That's one reason behind Tchias HaMeisim. The second reason, the Mabit says, is because, he says like this, the original plan was that man was supposed to live, he says it in two different ways, it's either forever or for 1,000 years. But because the chet of Adam Rishon, like we spoke about earlier in Parak, whatever, Tes Zayin, Yud Zayin, something like that, Yud Zayin, Yud Ches, by the chet of Adam Rishon, so people's lives were taken away, and they're not able to live for that long, 1,000 years or forever or whatever anymore. But as we know, B'yemayisim Mashiach, the chet of Adam Rishon is going to be fixed. It's because the chet of Adam Rishon is going to be fixed, so it's going to go back to the way it was originally. So therefore, people who die, they're going to lose out. So Hashem said, no, we'll bring them back to life, and then they'll be able to live out those extra years that really the people deserve to live if it wasn't for the chet of Adam Rishon. So that's the second reason of Tchias HaMeisim. And the third reason the Mabit says is a sugya. We know that in this world, so a person has a neshama and a guf, right? And the neshama and the guf together is the person's life in this world, right? Now, the mitzvahs that a person does are really a combination of his neshama and guf working together, right? The neshama is sort of the one that made the decision, to give this piece of tzedaka, and the hand is the one that actually handed it over to the poor man, right? Now, the idea of Olam Haba is that the neshama is going to be nana meziv hashchina. It's going to go like back to Hashem and get certain hana from being close to it, to its makar. That's the idea of Olam Haba. So the neshama is going to get its reward in Olam Haba when it gets close to Hashem, and that's its reward. But where does the goof get its reward? That's the neshama's reward. Where's the goof's reward? Where is my hand that gave the thing to the ani? Where's the hand going to get the reward? So you could say that the body is bottled to the goof. The body is bottled to the neshama. You could say that. But the Mafit says that Hashem wanted to give every piece of everyone that joined together that was mishtatef in the mitzvah. Every element deserves its reward. So therefore, Hashem is going to have the goof come back, and then the goof by Tchias HaMeisim. That's where the goof is going to get its reward. So that's the third reason why there's Tchias HaMeisim, so that the goof gets its reward. Okay, those are the three reasons of Tchias HaMeisim according to the Mabit. Again, we'll say it again, b'kitzur. One, so that you be able to finish off what you weren't able to do in your lifetime. The second one is so that people are going to be able to live that life that they should have lived without the chet of Adam Rishon. And the third is that the body, which was mishtatef in the doing the action of the mitzvahs, is going to be able to get its reward. Fine. Those are the three reasons of the Mabit. And another thing, another discussion in the Mabit over here is in Perek Nuntes and also in Samech, the Mabit brings a large excerpt from Rabbi Nisadia Glein's Amunas V'Deis, and basically Rabbi Nisadia Glein talks about Tchias HaMeisim, and he asks 10 questions about Tchias HaMeisim and gives the answers to those 10 questions about, the 10 most commonly asked questions about Tchias HaMeisim, the top 10. So Rabbi Nisadia Glein goes to the top 10 and gives the answers. And the Mabit, in between each question, in between the answers, has a whole long discussion about each thing and says, is it true, is it not true? It brings proofs and questions, whatever. So we'll just say over Bekitzer the 10 questions and answers of Rav Sadia Gaon. The first question of Rav Sadia Gaon is, who deserves to come back with Tchias HaMeisim? So Rav Sadia Gaon writes basically that any person who's a tzaddik, a Baal Tshuva, is going to come back by Tchias HaMeisim. And he says, don't think that that's going to be so little people, because it says it's very common for Jews to do tshuva right before they die, and you don't even realize it. So he says that the amount of people that are going to come back are is not as small as you think. Okay, well, I found the Shalos Tshuva's Mishnah Halachas from Menashe Klein, the Ungvarov, which is nifter like few years ago, in Chelik Yud Zayin Simen Reish Nun Dalet. So he also talks about this, and he wants to make a chiluk. We'll speak about this a little bit later tonight, about Tchias HaMeisim in Eretz Yisrael vis-a-vis Tchias HaMeisim in Chutz La'aretz. He says that in Tchias HaMeisim that's in Eretz Yisrael, he says only Tzadikim and Beinanim are going to come back. But it says Tchias HaMeisim in Chutz, in Tchilas HaMeisim in Eretz Yisrael, only Tzadikim. Yeah, both Tzadikim and Beinonim are going to come back. People who are Tzadik and whether and middle type people are going to come back. And the Tchilas HaMeisim that's going to be in Chutz La'aretz says only Tzadikim, but not the Beinonim. And then he says, but Rishoyim, even Eretz Yisrael are not going to come back. So he splits it into two types of Tchilas HaMeisim. Eretz Yisrael, it's going to be, yeah.
We'll get to that.
That there's such a thing as Chiz Mason and Chutz La'aretz. It is a Chiddush. I didn't really. Actually, when I was preparing, I didn't mean to say this over here, but I just threw it in now. Okay. The second question that Rav Sadia Gaon discusses is when people come back to life by Tchias Meisim, are they going to die afterwards? And he says, no, they're not going to die afterwards. They're going to go straight from Tchias Meisim to Olam Haba. So this brings up a whole discussion which I didn't really have a chance to look into. But there's a whole question of exactly when is Tchias Meisim going to happen and what's called Olam Haba. There's like Yemais Mashiach, and then Tchias HaMeisim, and then Olam Haba. But then there's like some that explain that Tchias HaMeisim is after Olam Haba, and then some people say that there's two Tchias HaMeisims. I didn't have a chance exactly to look all into that. But more or less, Rav Sadia Gaon understands that Olam Haba is something that happens after Tchias HaMeisim. And he says that we're going to go from the existence of Tchias HaMeisim to the existence of Olam Haba without death. But that's the second Shiloh. The third Shiloh, Rav Sadia Gaon asks, will the world be able to support so many people coming back to life? The population of the world is not, you know, now we have 7 billion people, Baruch Hashem. You know, when Tchias HaMeisim comes, all the people that ever existed, you know, almost all the people that ever lived, are going to all come back to life. How's the world going to be able to sustain? So he makes the whole Cheshbon more or less to say that the world could sustain it, and then the Mabit, you know, disagrees with his Cheshbon and makes his own Cheshbon, and he also comes out more or less that the world could be sustained.
Goyim coming back too.
What?
Goyim coming back too.
I don't know. He doesn't discuss this. That was the third question. The fourth question is, are people going to recognize their family and their friends? And he says basically yes. The fifth question is, if a person when he was alive, let's say he was blind or he was missing a limb or something like that, when he comes back to life, is that going to be there also? So he says basically that initially it will be, because otherwise people wouldn't recognize you. Like if you have a guy who like didn't have an arm or something, Leilenu, right? So then, you know, if he comes back with an arm, no one's going to recognize him. So first he's going to come back without the arm, then people are going to recognize him, and then Hashem is going to heal them. And then his arm will grow back or something like that. That was the fifth question. The sixth question is, are people going to eat, drink, and get married? And he says yes. After Tchias HaMeisim, people are going to eat, drink, and get married. And then the Mabit has a whole Arichas and says that the eating that we're talking about after Tchias HaMeisim is not the same type of eating that we're talking about, you know, in nowadays. He says that eating after Tchias HaMeisim, you can be able to eat a lot less, because the bodies will be like a lot purer, and you can like eat a lot less and live for like a lot longer without eating. That's what the Mabit says. So that was the sixth question. The seventh question is, he says, how is it possible that we're going to be able to go from Tchias HaMeisim, where a person is going to be living with a physical goof, to going straight to Olam Haba without anything in between? He asks, how is that possible? And then he answers, oh, just like Moshe Rabbeinu was able to do it, that Moshe Rabbeinu was a person, and then he went all the way to Har Sinai, and then he stopped eating and drinking, and he became like a malach, and then he came back, and went back up to Har Sinai, and came back down, and went back to Har Sinai. So you see that transition is possible. That's an interesting question. Like, I'm not sure what was he bothered by, what's he answering, but this is the seventh question. The eighth question is there going to be Bechira after Tchias HaMeisim? And he says yes.
If I understood right, the problem is, if there is Tchias HaMeisim, why do I have to kill him to put it back to the Olam Haba? So there's no dying anymore. So I think that's the problem with that question.
Yeah, you're right.
So how do you die to go to heaven?
Right, I hear it.
You don't die anymore.
It's a different way of living, yeah. The eighth question is there pira? He says yes. The ninth question is there schar for doing mitzvah? Is there schar for doing mitzvahs even after tchis amesim? More or less, he says yes. And then the tenth question he asks is those people that are already alive at the time the Mashiach comes, when there's going to be tchis amesim, what's going to happen to them? So Rav Sadia again says, he says there's three explanations to this, three answers. He says some say that those people are never going to die b'chal, and they'll just like live forever or whatever. Others say that they're gonna like die and then they come back to life, I guess instantly. And then others say that they're never gonna really die. They're just gonna like live a long life, longer than like normal, and then like die and go straight to Olam Haba. They'll never live in a world of Tchis Amesim necessarily. That's the third pshat that Rav Sadia Gaon says. Okay. There's a different Yedias Kalius about Tchis Amesim. Okay. So Rabbi Felder, I'm gonna speak about Rabbi Felder's question that he asked last week after the shir. We'll set it up in a little bit complicated way. Oh, I forgot to bring in Gemara. Okay, whatever. The Gemara in the Mabit in Perek Nun Ches, he brings different proofs and different sources and the Gemaras that sound like this. That basically the idea is that Tchis Amesim is only going to be in Eretz Yisrael and not in Chutz La'aretz. One of them, the biggest raya that bring, I mean, the Gemara's main proof to the idea of Tchis Amesim, which we'll speak about in a few minutes also, is from the pasuk that says, "Unasata mimenu truma sashem la'aron ha'kohen." It says you're going to give truma to Aaron ha'kohen, and the problem is that Aaron ha'kohen died before the came to Eretz Yisrael. So that was before there was such an idea of truma. So what do you mean you're going to give truma to Aaron ha'kohen? Aaron ha'kohen, there is no Aaron ha'kohen anymore. Like pashup shat means you give it to Aaron ha'kohen's descendants who are kahanim. But the Gemara says that this is a reference to the idea of tchis amesim, that you're going to, in the future, you're going to give truma to Aaron ha'kohen himself. So he says that's only in Eretz Yisrael, because Shum is only in Eretz Yisrael. He brings other such proofs like this. What's another one that says in the Pasuk? Okay, whatever. He brings a whole bunch of proofs to the idea that Tchis Amesim is only in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz La'aretz. However, in Perek Nunhei, earlier than this, Mabit says a Chiddush. He says that the Jews who died in the Midbar, in the 40 years in the Midbar, so it says that they're going to come back to life in the place that they were buried. They were buried in the Midbar, outside Eretz Yisrael. So they're going to come back to life by Tchis Amesim in their place, in the Midbar. So my business is why. Because we said before that one of the reasons of Tchis Amesim is to give a person a chance to do those mitzvahs that he wasn't able to do in his lifetime. So it says that these Jews in the Midbar were on their way to Eretz Yisrael to go be mekayim the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael, and for whatever reason, they messed up. There was a gzera, and Hashem said that you're going to have to die in the Midbar. But they were on their way to going to do a mitzvah. So Hashem wants them to be able to accomplish that mitzvah. So he'll bring them back to life where they are, and then they'll be able to go be mekayim the mitzvah of going to Eretz Yisrael. Chazal tells in other places that the people who died and are buried in Chutz La'aretz, so their bones are going to go through different mechilas, tunnels, or they're going to roll, or whatever, come to Eretz Yisrael, and come back to life in Eretz Yisrael. But the chiddush over here is that these people are going to come back to life in Chutz La'aretz, so that they'll be able to be mekayim the mitzvah of going to Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, so they're going to get to accomplish that going to Eretz Yisrael. That's the chiddush of the Mabit says. The other chiddush, then he says that He says, and the same thing is true with anybody. Anyone who was on his way to go to Eretz Yisrael and he died on his way to Eretz Yisrael, even though he died in Chutz La'aretz, he's going to be brought back to life in Chutz La'aretz so that he'll be able to accomplish this mitzvah of going to Eretz Yisrael and be mekayim it. And he brings a raya from the Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about the people that Yechezkel and Navi brought back to life, which happened in the place called Bikas Guro, which is in Bavel. And Chesed brought them back to life. Now the Gemara says, who are these people? So we spoke about this before in different venues. Perek Mem Ches, more or less, we said that the Gemara says that these people were the Bnei Ephraim, the people from Ephraim who miscalculated when the Gula from Mitzrayim is supposed to happen, and they started coming back to Eretz Yisrael even before Moshe Rabbeinu redeemed the Jews from Mitzrayim. Okay? So since they were, and then they ended up dying. So since they died on the way to Eretz Yisrael, they were trying to go to Eretz Yisrael, so Hashem is going to make it that they came back to life, even though they weren't in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, we're in Bikas Dura.
Get all the way over there.
Yeah, you. Someone asked me this last week. I don't know. I didn't. I couldn't find anyone who talks about that. If they went Derech Eretz Plishtim,
they missed it by far.
Yeah, I don't know how they ended up there. I'm not sure. But that's what the Mabit says.
Unless you're giving your life for him, it says it's called Eretz Shinar because all the bones of the people who get killed by the Marble went down to Shinar. So maybe also the bones of the Friday, they also went down to.
It could be, but like why?
It's a lower down place. The force of gravity pulled it down.
That's the word. I don't know. But then the Mabit says it could be that the reason why these people came back to life even though they were in Chutz Lars, he says maybe it was a Tzarech Shah that Yechezkel was trying to bring out Hashem wanted Yechezkel to bring out a point that there's going to be such a thing as Chutz Lars, as Tchis Mesim, and there's going to be a Geula in the future. So Hashem, in order to bring out, to illustrate that point, make it, you know, really make them be able to visualize the idea of Geula, so Hashem had to make, Hashem wanted to make this Nes of Tchis Mesim in Chutz Lars, even though normally Hashem doesn't do Tchis Mesim in Chutz Lars. That's what the Mabit says in Perek Nun Ches. So the question is like this. Rabbi Felder asks, there's a Gemara, there's two Gemaras. There's one Gemara that says, in Masechet Shabbos, it says that Klal Yisrael, when they were at Har Sinai, I think it's in Shabbos, when they were at Har Sinai, they heard Anoichi and Lo Yi Elacha from Hashem, and it says, Parcha Nishmaslam, they all died, and then they came back to life, and then they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, we don't want to hear the rest of the Aseret Hadvarim, you say it to us, we don't want to hear from Hashem, because maybe we're going to die, and we're not going to come back to life, we can't guarantee it anymore. So they heard the rest of the Luchas from Hashem, the rest of the Aseret Hadvarim from Hashem. What happened was they were alive, they died, and they came back to life. Yeah? Now the question is, that happened outside of Eretz Yisrael. That was in Chutz Lars. It was in Midbar Sinai. It wasn't in Eretz Yisrael. That's one question. The other question is, there's a famous Gemara in Maseches Megillah, Daf Zayin Amud Beis. Gemara says that one the. It says, Amar Rava Chai Ben Shavasimi Vepuria Adelayada Ben Araham Levarach Mordechai. It says the person is obligated to drink or to make himself smelly. On Purim, Levasimi could mean to make yourself smelly. Right? There is Hashem Shah. To drink on Purim until he gets so drunk that he doesn't know the difference between Baruch Mordechai and Araham. Right, so then the Gemara says that Rabbah and Reb Zera were once having a Suda together, and it says, Kam Rabbah v'ashketel Reb Zera. Rabbah got up and he shechted Reb Zera. And then it says that what happened was Rabbah davened to Hashem, he prayed to Hashem, and for mercy, for Achamim, whatever, and then Reb Zera came back to life. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, finishes up, says the next year, the rabbi asked Reb Zera, you want to come over again? We'll have a siddur together. Reb Zera said, no. Not every year is a nace going to happen that I can come back to life. That's more or less the Gemara over there. Now the question is, Rabbi Felder asked this last week, that story, L'chara, happened in Bavel. Right? But we said there's no Chutz Lars, there are no Tchias and Mesim in Chutz Lars. So the story with Rabbi and Reb Zera, how can it be that he brought him back to life in Chutz Lars? So I found that earlier in the Mabit, also in Perek Nun Dalet, over here, he talks about there's three different levels of Tchias HaMesim. He says there's three levels of Tchias HaMesim. The first level is where a person's neshama doesn't have a chance yet to go up to the place where the neshamas go. After the person died, the neshama goes somewhere. So if the Tchias HaMesim happens before the neshama has the chance to get to that place, that's one level of Tchias HaMesim. And he says that that's what happened by the Ben Tzarfas, the child that Elio and Novi brought back to life that we spoke about last week, and the Ben Shunamis that we're going to, Ezra Hashem, speak about next week, that Elisha brought back to life, and he says, Klal Yisrael by Har Sinai, that's what happened to them. Right? The Neshama came out, and you know, a few hours, mamish instantaneously, or maybe a few hours later, it was brought back to life. That's one Darg of Tchias HaMesim. Then he says another Darg of Tchias HaMesim is the Tchias HaMesim that happened by Yechezkel. By Yechezkel, it was the neshama, you know, was already gone for a while, and the bones were still here, but the bones were dry. It's a different Darg of Tchias HaMesim. There are bones, but the bones are dry. That's another Darg of Tchias HaMesim. And then the third Darg of Tchias HaMesim, the Mabit says, is the type of Tchias HaMesim which is going to happen in the future, which are where the bones are like already rotten, and the bones like barely even exist anymore. They're already decomposed. And that's like the highest Darg of Tchias HaMesim. So now that we have this, the classification, the distinction between the three types of Tchias HaMeisim, we could say that when we say that Tchias HaMeisim is only going to happen in Eretz Yisrael and not in Chutz La'aretz, maybe it's only talking about this last type of Tchias HaMeisim where there's no bones left anymore. But if there are bones, even if they're dry bones, then it could be it will happen in Chutz La'aretz, and that's why the story of Yechezkel happened in Chutz La'aretz. Or even though, even the first Darga, where it's like almost instantaneous, that where the neshama came out and then came back in, or within a few hours or whatever, like Chal Yisrael by Har Sinai, or maybe like we're going to see now, Rabba and Reb Zera, so then that's the type of Tchias HaMeisim that could happen to Chutz La'aretz. Oh, that's my Chiddush.
That one
but
wasn't such a big, because his flesh was still there.
Right, his flesh was mom is still there.
100% blood, flesh, right. He just didn't have neshama.
Right. I had another pshat a friend of mine wanted to say. I'm not sure if he was saying it as a joke or not, but he wanted to say that there's a Gemara Ksubas that talks about this. That, you know, Reb Zera, sometimes Reb Zera is called Rav Zera, and sometimes it's called Rebbe Zera. Yeah? Do you know what the difference is?
Yeah, because he was in Eretz Yisrael.
Oh, so when he was in Chutz La'aretz, he was called Rav Zera, and when he was in Eretz Yisrael, he was called Rebbe Zera.
Most of the time he was called Rebbe Zera.
Right. Because when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he got smicha in Eretz Yisrael, so from then on he was called Rebbe Zera. So it could be that this story with Rabbi and Reb Zera happened before he got his smicha in Eretz Yisrael, and maybe he was already on his way to go to Eretz Yisrael, he had his plans or whatever. So because he was on his way to go to Eretz Yisrael, so then he could have his Tchias HaMeisim even though he's in Chutz La'aretz. It's just like the Mabit said by the Dor HaMidbar, that because they were on their way to Eretz Yisrael, so they were zecha to have, they're going to be zecha to have Tchias HaMeisim even though they're in Chutz La'aretz. In Chutz La'aretz, so too maybe Reb Zera, that's the reason why he had his Tchias HaMeisim in Chutz La'aretz, because he was on his way to Eretz Yisrael to become Rebbe Zera. I'm not sure if Reb Yosef Don Snow, I don't know if he was saying it seriously or not, but he said such a shot. But there's another shot like this. The Ben Ish Chai in his Sefer Ben Yoyada on Masechas Megillah on Zayin Amid Beis, he asked a shot like this. He says, when Reb Zera died and he came back to life, Shaila is, this is more of like a lambda shaila, a halachic shaila. What's the halachic status, let's say, of Reb Zera's wife? Because when a person dies, so now his wife is allowed to get married, right? But now he came back to life. So now, does he have to remarry her because he's like a new person? Or do we say, no, he died, he came back to life, he's a continuation of the same Reb Zera, it's the same person. So of course he doesn't have to remarry his wife. She's still married to him. He never, you know, it's as if he never really died. He's the same guy. So the Ben Ish Chai basically, actually, oh, he brings this question b'shem the Chida. The Ben Ish Chai basically answers in Ben Yoyod over there. He says that he wants to bring a raya that no, you're this. When a person dies and comes back to life, he has the halachic status as the same person. He's not considered a new person. Why? He says, he brings our Gemara that we mentioned in the Gemara Shabbos, Daf Peches, that all the Yidden by Matan Torah in Har Sinai, they all died and they came back to life. And he says, and we never find that every person had to go remarry their wife, because when they died, then the wife became mutter, and then when they came back to life, so he says, it's poshut that you're the same person. Why shouldn't you be the same person? And he brings another raya from the Gemara in Maseches Nida, on Daf Ayin Amid Beis. The Gemara Nida is talking about the Ben Hashanamis. They asked, what's the halacha? Is it Ben Hashanamis? Is he Tomei or not? But the Ben Hashanamis is the story we're going to speak about Be'ezus Hashem next week. The child of the Isha Hashanamis that died and Elisha brought him back to life. So the shayla of the Gemara is he Metame Tumas Meis? Because if you touch a dead body, you become Tomei Meis. But this kid, he died, but he came back to life. So maybe he's not Tomei Meis anymore because he's alive. And basically the Gemara is, huh? That's a different Gemara, we'll get to that soon.
Yeah, it was a different Gemara.
Yeah. So the Gemara says, it's Pasha that he's not Metame Tumas Meis. Why? So the Ben Ish Chai explains, actually, who says this? Okay, well, the Ben Ish Chai basically understands that the Pshat is because he died and he came back to life, so it's as if he never really died, so he's the same person. So then you don't say Tumas Meis on someone who's not dead. He didn't really die. It's just a continuation of the same person. Now, Lamaisa, there's an interesting idea that the Aderes says that he wants to be mechadish, and no, you're not really the same person, and it's not the mainstream mahalach, and we'll see there's proofs that you really are the same person. But he wants to say as a chiddush that you're sort of not the same person, to some extent. What's the story? The story is like this. There's a Gemara in Brachos on Daf Mem Vav Amar Aleph. The Gemara says that Reb Zeira, there was a whole meal over there, and Reb Zeira was there, and Reb Yehohu was there, and basically the Gemara says that Reb Zeira wasn't the one who led benching over there. He wasn't the one who was the leader by the benching. Rather, Reb Yehohu, he was the one who led benching. So the Adaras asks, why is it that Reb Yehohu led benching at that Suda if Reb Zeira was a Kohen? The Gemara, in a few places, actually, there's a tesis in Masechet Kedushin Daf Ches Amud Aleph that talks about whether Reb Zeira was a Kohen. And more or less, we said that Reb Zeira was a Kohen. So if Reb Zeira was a Kohen, so then why did Reb Yehohu lead benching? You give it to the Kohen for us to lead benching. Why is Reb Yehohu, who wasn't a Kohen, why is he leading benching, not Reb Zeira? So the Deres says that because we have this story with Rabba and Reb Zeira, where Rabba shechted Reb Zeira, he killed him, and then he came back to life. So he says that now that he came back to life, he's no longer a Kohen, because he's a different person. He's not the same Reb Zeira anymore. He's a new person. That's the chiddush of the Deres. Now, Lemaiso, the Deres wrote this down in a letter to Rav Chaim Berlin. Rav Chaim Berlin writes back that he wrote back more or less that, you know, I'm assuming that you're saying a joke over here, because it can't be true. Because we mentioned before, the Pasuk says, how do we know there's such a thing as Chesed Mesim in the Torah? Because it says the Pasuk, Nesatim Mimenu is Shumas Hashem La'aron HaKohen. You're going to give Shuma to Aaron HaKohen. Now, if you say that a person who dies and comes back to life is no longer a Kohen, so why in the future are we going to be giving Shuma to Aaron HaKohen? He's not a Kohen anymore. So it has to be that when you die and you come back to life, if Kohen dies and comes back to life, obviously he's still a Kohen. That's Rav Chaim Berlin's kasha on that there.
Also still Aaron.
What?
He's still Aaron. He's still the same person.
Yeah, he's still Aaron. He's still Aaron. He's still Kohen.
It's not only still a Kohen, it's still Aaron. He's still the same person.
Yeah. So he says, what?
Just because you die doesn't mean you change your father's
different. Right. So he says it's Pasha. Yeah, so he says this Pasha that you're really the person who dies and comes back to life is the same person. That Rav Chaim Berlin says it's Pasha, like we said from the Ben Yishai.
Did he answer back?
No, he didn't answer back. What I did find is there's a Kevitz called Kevitz Har Hamor in volume Zion, which was Nisan Tavshin Mem Hei. So there's a Shtikel Torah from Rav Yaakov Chaim Sefer, there's a Yeshiva in the Yeshiva's Kafa Chaim. Sfardi Ravi, Sfardi Shashiva is a big bucky in different types of things. So he brings down this Adaras and he wants to bring a proof to the Adaras' Shita. From a Gemara, from a Sugi and Yuma. Basically, the Sugi and Yuma Daf, where is it? I wrote it down here. Hamid Beis. There's a pasuk in this week's Parsha Tzav, which says that by the Miluim, you have to. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to dress up Aaron Ubanov. You're going to dress up Aaron Ubanov. The Gemara asks the Kasha. Like go ask the Shiloh. And when it says, how is Moshe Rabbeinu going to dress Aaron Ubanov? Is he going to dress them? You know, first he's going to dress Aaron, then he's going to dress one son, then the next son, then the next son, the next son. Or is he going to dress them like this? First thing you put on is the Michnas Evad, right? The pants. So first he's going to put the pants on Aaron, the pants on one son, the pants on the next son, the pants on the next son, etc. Then the shirt. He's going to put the shirt on Aaron, the shirt on him, shirt on him, shirt on him, shirt on him, etc. Being the shadows, you're going to dress them in order of first you're going to do each person, or you're going to do each clock, each art. That's the Gemara's shadow. Okay? So the Gemara says, because it says you're going to dress Aaron Ubanov. So the Gemara says, why are you asking such a question? Like, Lamai Nafkamin, who cares? Okay? So the Ramban in Sefer Mitzvahs, in Sherish Gimel, in Sefer Mitzvahs, the Ramban says that what's the nafkamin of the Gemara's question? It says the nafkamin is that in the future, when Aaron and Ubanov are going to come back to life after Tchias HaMesim, there's going to be a nafkamin. How are we going to do the miluyim? How are we going to make them into a kohen? We have to dress Aaron and Ubanov, so we're going to do it in the order of the person, and we're going to do it in the order of the article of clothing. That's what the Ramban says. So what Rav Yaakov Chaim Sefer Shlita says from this Ramban is you see that a person who dies and comes back to life is no longer the same person. Because why would Aaron Ubanav need to do Miluyim over again? They already got it in the time of the Midbar. Right? So why would they have to do it again? Elamai, you're a new person. He wanted to bring a riot to that Ders. Elamai, I found in the, again, Rav Menashe Klein, in his Sefer, Shal Shivas Mishnah Halachas, Chaylik Yud Zayin, Simin Reish Nun Gimel, he brings this proof. He says it's not a proof. Because we don't see from that Gemara that you lose the status of a Kohen. You just see that you were going to need to do again the Miluyim. I mean, like you can say, like there's a halachic din that you need to do Miluyim over again. But that doesn't mean that he's no longer Kohen. In fact, I mean, you would have to say something like that, because if he's not a Kohen, then it doesn't, you can't do Miluyim anyways.
So it doesn't look Kohen because he didn't get Truma.
Yeah. So for, I mean, yeah, that was Chaim Berlin's question from that come on. So it's posh. I mean, it's come out posh that a person dies, comes back to life, is more or less it's posh that he's the same person. So there's another raya that they bring. I saw this in the Sefer. I didn't write that where I saw this. I wrote it down from David Horowitz from Strasbourg, France. And the name of his sefer is Betzela Chachma, I believe. I think that's where I saw this. The Gemara we mentioned last week about Eliyahu, the Rabbi Bar Avuya, the Gemara in Bava Metzia, Kuf Yud Aleph, says that Rabbi Bar Avuya bumped into Eliyahu Hanavi in a Goyish basic forest in Goyish cemetery, and he says to him, after a discussion, he says to him, "Aren't you a Kohen? What are you doing in the basic forest?" So Eliyahu Hanavi says to him, I hold like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai that a goy is not tamei, etc. Right? So the question is, let's try to figure out who is Eliyahu Hanavi. Eliyahu Hanavi was the person who, let's say, okay, we said Eliyahu Hanavi is Pinchas, so he's a kohen, right? He's a kohen, fine. But the what happened to Eliyahu Hanavi was that he died. He came back more or less. He died and came back to life. Pesukim in Sefer Malachim say that he went up to Shemayim in a fire or whatever. That more or less means he died, right? So if he died and he came back to life, so then he should be a new person, right? So what's the problem with him being in basic chorus? He's a new person. Elamai, you see that if a person dies, a kohen dies, and he comes back to life, he's still a kohen, and you could still expect that he's not going to be in a basic chorus, right? Elamai, so what I just said before, that the way we look at Eliyahu Hanavi is that he's like a person who died and he came back to life. That's not necessarily so pashut. Of how to look exactly at what happened to Eliyahu Hanavi, there is a famous Truma Sedeshin. The Truma Sedeshin writes that what's the status of the wife of Eliyahu Hanavi? Eliyahu Hanavi went up to Shemayim in a fire, right? Now, does that mean that he's dead and his wife is allowed to get married? Yeah. So the Truma Sedeshin says that yes, he's considered dead and his wife is allowed to get married. Most of the Mefarshim ask about this different things. That from our Gemara, it sounds like he didn't really die. So maybe, basically, Rav Elchanan Wasserman in Kevitz Shiram Chelik Beis Simin Chav Ches, and Rav Shlomo Kluger in Chachma Shlema and Evan Ezra Simin Yazayin, they basically bring the Gemara in Bava Metzia, and they ask from it that, how can we say that Eliyahu Hanavi is considered dead if the Gemara is assuming that he's not supposed to be in a basic forest. So that sounds like he's still alive. Okay, so they obviously didn't understand that if a person dies and comes back to life, he has a status of the same person. They didn't entertain that possibility. They obviously, he was either always alive, or he's considered dead, and then he's completely part of the mitzvahs.
Why did nothing have to be alive? It could be,
No, because if you're dead, then meis is nasa chavshim in a mitzvah. So you don't have to keep mitzvahs like bachla if you're dead.
You're talking about mitzvahs.
Tuma is a mitzvah. The fact that a kohen is not allowed to become tummy, right? That's the isra. It's one of the 613 commandments, right? Otherwise, fine. Who cares, right? Otherwise, the be'er hetiv. The Be'er Hetiv in Eben Ezer Simon Yud Zayin says like the halacha that if a person dies and comes back to life, so it's considered like he was alive the entire time and he has the original the same status. You know, you don't have to get remarried, etc. We'll just finish off this part of the discussion with a shtickle Torah from Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Rav Chaim Kanievsky in the Sefer Siach HaSadeh, has a kunch called Kunchus HaLikutim in Simon Dalet over there. Rav Chaim Kanievsky brings four proofs that if a person dies and comes back to life, he has the same halachic status as the person that he was before. He's not a new person, nothing changes. The first raya that he brings has to do with the story of Shalom ben Tikva, which we didn't see yet in the Pirkei d'Eliezer. Well, hopefully we'll see that, not next week, probably the week after next week. We'll see that story, so we'll skip the first raya. The second raya he brings is from what we spoke about last week. The Eliyahu and Navi brought back to life the kid, the Ben Tzarfus. Right? And then we said in Pirkei d'Eliezer that who was this kid? That kid was Yoina ben Amitai, the Navi Yoina. Right, the book of Yonah, right? He's Yonah ben Amittai. Now, the pasuk says about him, you know, that he the pasuk in the beginning of Yonah in Treyasar, some people make this mistake. People think that the 12 prophets of Treyasar, each one is a separate book. Right? They look at Yonah is its own book, Hosea is its own book, all these different things. It's not true. They're not separate books. It's all one book called Treyasar. You write a Megillah. You want to put Treyasar in the Sefer. You write a whole Sefer, you know, a whole Megillah of Treyasar. You don't write like just a Megillah Sefer. It's a Christian thing. It comes from the Christians who broke up the Bible in that way. But really, Treyasar is one Sefer. I don't know. People make this mistake. But whatever. Akupan, it says in the pasuk, Yoina ben Amittai. Yoina, the son of Amittai. Now, if you want to tell me the person who dies and comes back to life loses his familial relationships, and he's a new person, so how can it say he's Ben Amittai? He's not Ben Amittai, he's some new guy named Just Yoina. It's interesting, if you look in Pirkei d'Eliezer, you can open it up and look back at what we did last week, you'll see that the Medrash says that the kid that Eliyahu HaNavi brought back to life, it says he's Yoina. It doesn't say Yoina Ben Amittai, it just says Yoina. But Al Kapanim, the Pasuk calls him Yoina Ben Amittai, and this was after he came back to life. So you see that the Pasuk understands that even though he died and came back to life, he's the same person. That's one raya that that's the second raya of Chaim Kanievsky brings. The first one we skipped because it has to do with what we're going to do and we didn't see yet. The second raya is from Yoina Ben Amittai. I wrote this many years ago, so I wrote down in this footnote, and now I see that it's wrong, but I wrote down that it's not a raya, because maybe you'll say that there's a Gemara in Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel, that says that a person who raises an orphan in his house is as if he gave birth to that person. Right? So you could say that even though Amittai wasn't necessarily the father of Yoina, because when Yoina died and came back to life, so then he loses the status of being this guy's son, but because that guy raised him, so he's looked at as his father. Yeah? Maybe we would say that's the pshat.
One second. Where's Amittai?
Huh?
Where's Amittai by the time he died?
Oh! So that's why I wrote this down, but it's wrong. Because we said that the lady that came to Eliyahu HaNavi was an almana.
Yeah.
She was a widow. Yeah. So obviously Amittai is gone. He's out of the picture. So you can't say that Amittai is called his father because he raised him. It has to be because he's biologically his father, even though the kid died and came back to life. So the Chayyur of Chaim Kanievsky's rat is still a good rat. I spoke to somebody else, a younger man named, what's his name? Pesach Feldman. He learns in Ar Samech. So you know him? Pesach Feldman? Interesting guy. So there's a Pesach Feldman. He wanted to disagree with Chaim Kanievsky's raya for a different reason. He says that it could be that, no, really, Yoina ben Amittai, he no longer has a status as the son of Amittai because he died and came back to life. It's as if he's a new person. So why does the pasuk call him Yoina ben Amittai? Because if it didn't call him Yoina ben Amittai, you would think he's a mamzer. It would be like shady that like he's not called after the person who's seemingly his father. It would like make might see some sort of lies. I mean, people might say rumors or whatever. So therefore, we wanted to say no. He's Yoina ben Amittai.
That's the same thing that the mother said.
What?
To
similar. Yeah, it's similar. But that's Rav Chaim Kanievsky's second raya. The third raya is a little complicated. It's like this. There's a Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah Perek Beis Halacha Hey. Yerushalmi in Rosh Hashanah says that Rav Kana, who was a descendant of Eli, Eli HaKoyen. There was a curse on the house of Eli HaKoyen that they're not going to live, they're not going to have a long life. So Rav Kana, who was a descendant of Eli HaKoyen, he got a special bracha that he should have a long life. Now, there's another story about Rav Kana in the Gemara in Bava Kamma in Daf Kuf Yud Zayin. The Gemara says basically that Rav Yechanan, he misunderstood something that Rav Kana said when Rav Kana was a bachar or whatever, and Rav Yechanan gave him, you know, a bad eye and he killed him. And then Rabbi Yochanan realized afterwards, I don't remember exactly the story by heart, but he realized afterwards that he made a mistake, and he davened, and Rav Kana came back to life. Yeah. So he died, and he came back to life. Now the shaila is like this. If a person dies and comes back to life, does he have the status of the same person, or doesn't he have the status of the same person? If he has the status of the same person, right, so then... One second. If he's a new person, so then either the bracha that he's going to have a long life didn't work, because if he died, then and now he's a new person, so you didn't have that bracha. Or you'll say that... No, if you say that he's a new person, so then you don't need the bracha, or the bracha never was fulfilled. That's the part. Either if he has the status of a new person, so then why would he need a bracha to live long? He's no longer considered a descendant of Eli. Fine. So you'll tell me he's not a new person. So then, since he's not a new person, he would need a bracha in order to live long, right? Or the other way you could say it is that if he is a new person, so then the bracha didn't work. Because when did the bracha happen? Okay, it's not necessarily a good proof, because it could be that the story with the bracha happened after he was already resurrected. No, even still, because if the bracha happened after he was resurrected, so then on the side that he's a new person, then he doesn't need the bracha. Right? So either the bracha didn't work, or he doesn't need the bracha if he's a new person. So you have to say that he's the same person.
Bracha
v'tal. So that's one that Rav Chaim Filevsky says. That's the third proof. And the fourth proof is from our Gemara about Reb Zera, that basically we said that he wants to say that the story by Reb Zera, the Rabbi Shachter Reb Zera died and came back to life. He says, wait a second. If you look at Reb Zera, he's no longer, let's say, related to his parents. He's like a new entity that's created, you know, in the Luft. In the air, all by himself. So then, Reb Zera Lachari, Reb Chaim Kesu says he should become a ger, because he's not Jewish, because his parents weren't Jewish, because he's a new thing. So from the fact that we don't find that Reb Zera ever needed gerus, so you see that Mestama he was a Jew, and therefore it's going to be that when a person dies and comes back to life, is the same person. So I wanted to argue, just for the sake of arguing, with this last proof also, because there's a famous Chacham Tzvi in the Tshuva. The Chacham Tzvi says, what's the halacha if you make a goylem and you have 9 people in your minion and you want to mitzarif the goylem to be the 10th guy in the minion? Could the goylem be mitzarif or not? So the Chacham Tzvi wants to say that it could be that the goylem is considered the 10th person for the minion. Because he's a Maisi, a Daim Shal Tzadikim, he's a creation of a Tzadik, so he's like a Hemshech of the Tzadik, so therefore he has like, he's like sort of like the Tzadik, so therefore he could be a star from the minute. The Chacham Tzvi writes this. So I'm going to say that maybe that's the same thing over here with Rabbi and Reb Zera. Rabbi Shach and Reb Zera is dead. Now Rabbi Avin, that he brought Reb Zera back to life, it's no different than if Rabbi would have created Reb Zera as a Goylem, then of course he's still going to be Jewish.
Is there
a shtick of porn term? No, I'm not saying he is a goyim. I'm saying he's not worse than a case of a goyim. It's a shtick of porn term, you're right. Al Kopanim, this Chacham Tzvi, it's brought down from the Chacham Tzvi had a few sons, but one of his sons was the Yaibitz. He has another son who is less famous called Reb Meshulam Ashkenazi. Reb Meshulam Ashkenazi, the beginning of his Sefer, I forgot what it's called, Beis Meshulam, I think, something like that. He brings a few tshuvas from his father. And one of the tshuvas from the Chacham Tzvi, he writes that, even though I wrote in my Sefer Chacham Tzvi that I'm a supik if a goyim could be mitzarif in a minion, and I wanted to say that maybe he could, he said, I thought about it afterwards, and for sure it can't be. So anyways, you can't say such a thing. Fine. Well, okay, so those are the Chaim Kanevsky's four proofs that if a person dies and comes back to life, is considered the same person. This last one from is from the story of Rabbi and Reb Zera. Now we'll end with a few ideas over here. Basically, when we talk about the story of Rabbi and Reb Zera, so there's multiple approaches how to look at this story. Until now, we've been assuming that we're taking it at face value and we're saying it literally happened. The Rabbi literally went and shechted Reb Zera and he literally died, and then Rabbi literally davened for him to come back to life and he came back to life. That's how we understood a pshat. That's what the Gemara seems to be saying. We're going to see that other mafarshim take it to mean other things, not exactly the way the Gemara says it. But this is a pashup shot. Now, there's one shot in the Rishayim. Why is the Gemara bringing down this story? What's the point of this story? So the famous Ran brings B'Shem Rabbeinu Ephraim. Rabbeinu Ephraim was the Talmud of the Rif. The Ran brings B'Shem Rabbeinu Ephraim. The reason why the Gemara is telling us this story is to tell you that even though previously the Gemara had said that Chaya Ben Ishim B'Simu B'Foria Ad L'Yadda Ben Ora Haman V'Orach Mordechai, the person is supposed to get so drunk that you can't tell the difference, then the Gemara brings this story to tell you that afterwards they rescinded this halacha and said, no, you don't have to get that drunk, because if things get out of hand, someone could get killed, someone could get hurt, we don't want that to happen, so they took away that chiyuv. That's what Rabbeinu Ephraim says, and the Ran brings us down. And there are Peskin that pass like this, the Bach, etc. The Pri Chodesh disagrees with Rabbeinu Ephraim. The Pri Chodesh wants to say that Stam, the Gemara is bringing it as a warning. It's not coming to tell us that they took away the decree. He has a proof, slightly. His proof is the Shtigl Shrach, but the proof is that the Gemara says that the next year, so Rabbi invited Reb Zera again. Reb Zera says, oh, not every year is a nace going to happen. But the Gemara should have said, what do you mean? They already rescinded the obligation to get drunk, so what's the problem? He's not going to get drunk anymore. Elamai, you see, they didn't take it away. That's what the Pri Chodesh says. I found it's not such a strong book. I just saw this morning actually in a sefer called Pirush of Yosef Nisargosa Ala Pera. One of the Talmidim of the Ran is a Pirush of Chumash. Parshas VaYikra, the end of the parsha, he brings down this Rabbeinu Ephraim. It seems like he goes like Rabbeinu Ephraim, that the Gemara is bringing this story to tell you that he took away the chiyuv of Chayav Inish L'Sumi. But then he says, but still there's eating, you should drink a little bit, and you should be happy, etc. So like even if you're gonna hold it, there's no chiyuv of adlo yoda, but there's still a chiyuv of drinking and being happy. That's what the Revisa Misargosa says. Then I looked, my brother-in-law wrote a little quintress about the mitzvah of getting drunk on Purim. He wrote a whole quintress about it 2 years ago called Shtia Kedos. So I looked in his quintress and he always brings down all the opinions. He even brought down this Rav Yosef Misargosa, which I thought, you know, I'm the only guy who knew about it. But he brought it down also. He actually, in my brother-in-law's sefer, he has a haskama from Rav Moshe Tversky from Harnof, who was killed, was it a year and a half ago, that you guys were just talking about before this year. So this was I think the only haskama he ever gave to something. To my brother-in-law, little quintress about the midst of getting drunk. Al-Kabonim, so they're obviously taking the story literally. Sam Sefer as well takes the story literally, but he says that the problem is only by Rabba. Says that the Gemara says in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Nun Vav Amin Alf. The Gemara says that Rabba was born under the zodiacal influence of Madim, of Mars. And because he was born under Mars, so he had a certain inclination, a certain netia towards blood. Because Mars is associated with blood. I could go into a whole rechitz about that right now, but I don't want to because we're already at the end of this year. But blood, red, Mars, red planet, Edom, etc. Base of Al-Kapodim. So Rabba, it was dangerous for him to get drunk because, you know, he'll go back to his natural inhibitions and then, you know, he'll go and kill somebody. The Gemara says that a person that's born under the influence of Madim is either going to become a murderer or he'll become like a Shaykhid or a Moyel or something like that. So Rabba left his own devices, you know, become a murderer. But, you know, he shouldn't have drank up Purim. But some Sefer says, but everyone else was not necessarily born under the influence of Madim. They could drink up Purim. That's the one that the Chassam Sefer says. There's another Shnikul from the Chassam Sefer. This is a very gishmak one. The Chassam Sefer brings, where is this? The Chassam Sefer in Chulat Daf Ches. The Gemara says that Reb Zera said that second Melubenes is kosher for shechita. If you have a knife that's white hot, a white hot knife, are you allowed to use that to shecht an animal, to slaughter an animal? Because when you shecht an animal, it has to be that you cut it with a knife. Right? Now, if you burn the animal's throat before you cut it, you made it into a trefa, and then it's no longer kosher, and it's no longer, you're not, you can't eat that animal anymore. Right? So the shell is, if you cut the animal with a knife that's white hot, is the shechita kosher, or did you make the animal into a trefa before you did the shechita? So the Gemara says, the Reb Zera said that the shechita is kosher. So Chassam Sefer brings in the name of his Rebbe, the flaw, Reb Pinchas Horowitz. He says, how did Reb Zera know that the knife cuts the animal's throat before the heat of the knife burns it? So he says, because in this story, when Rabbi shechted Reb Zera, that's the type of knife that Rabbi used. So Reb Zera felt, he's feeling the blade of the knife before he's feeling the heat of the knife. That's what the Afla said. The Chassam Sefer brings this down, and it says that even though my Rebbe, the Afla, said this when he was drunk on Purim, and it sounds like it's a joke, but he says, since my Rebbe said it, it's Emes Lamito Shel Torah, and that's Avad Pshat and Gemara. That's the Chassam Sefer. A third Chassam Sefer about the story of Rabbi and Reb Zera. Gemara says that Reb Zera, where's this Gemara? Daf Chaf Gimel Amar Aleph and Mesechas Nida. Gemara says that Reb Zera was makbid not to laugh, because he knows that laughing, the Gemara says, "Chayv v'kalos reish mevi lehergal avera," it brings the person to avera. So he mekabel himself not to laugh, not to joke around. That was Reb Zera. He was a very serious person, right? So the Gemara, so the Chassam Sefer wants to say that what happened at the party was, now we're going to take it not literally anymore. Rabbi didn't kill Reb Zera. What Rabbi did was, maybe he set up a good joke, or he tickled Reb Zera, I don't know exactly what, but he did something to make Reb Zera laugh. And that was going against what Reb Zera was mekabel on himself. So because of that, Reb Zera looked at himself, I guess, as if he was killed. And then he did tshuva or whatever, and then he came back to where he was holding. And they bring down B'Shem the Imri Yemes, that the word Zera, the name of Reb Zera, Zera is a Rosh HaTevis for Zia, Reses, Zia, Yira, Reses, and Ema. There's different types of Zia is like trembling, and Ema, Reses, Zia. That's the Mahus of Reb Zera, who Reb Zera was. It was a very serious and like intense person, and then like Rabba sort of like made it too jokingly, and then he couldn't take that. Marsha also says a similar idea, that it's not that Rabbi literally shechted Reb Zera, but rather that he made Reb Zera drink too much wine and he got sick, and Rabbi davened him to get better. Meiri more or less says such an idea also. I brought down also from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I have here in my notes that he writes in, it's written from B'Shem Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in Halichas Shlomo, that Reb Zera, that what happened was that not that Rabbi killed Reb Zera, but he did something that embarrassed Reb Zera. And we say that if you embarrass a person, it's as if you killed him, right? The Gemara in Bamitzia on Daf Nun Ches Min Beis, right? So if he embarrassed him, so that's what the story was talking about. And then Rabbi Davin, meaning Rabbi Davin for Zera to forgive him for having embarrassed him. It was other pshatim that Ibn Shu'ab says that Reb Zera became so drunk that there was wine coming out of his mouth and it looked like it was blood. And Rav Avram Ben Aramam says a similar thing, that Rabbi hit Reb Zera and he was bleeding and it looked like he was shechted, but not. There's a lot of these different explanations which they're trying to understand the idea of what happened with Rabbi and Reb Zera. It was not literally that he killed him, but rather something else that was happening over there. We'll just end off with one idea over here that I saw from the Shin of a Rav, Yecheskel Shraga Halberstam, the son of the Divrei Chaim. He writes Divrei Yecheskel on Purim. He brings B'Shem the Yisbach Moshe. And then another idea. The Gemara, the Lashon of the Gemara is Kom Rabba V'Ashka Tilar B'Zera. What does it mean, Kom Rabba? See, he's also taking it not literally. It says Kom Rabba means Rabba got up. What does it mean he got up? It means that Rabba went up and he ascended high dargas of Ruchnis through Avedis Hashem and Purim. That's what it means, Kom Rabba. Rabba went up. He went up in dargas and Ruchnis. And when it says V'Ashka Tilar B'Zera, so he says that Ashka Tilar doesn't always mean shachting, but it can also mean pulling. He pulled Reb Zera. Rabbi went up in great dargas in Ruchnis, and he pulled Reb Zera to come join him to those high dargas. But the problem is that Reb Zera wasn't ready, he wasn't holding by that to get to that experience yet. So when Reb Zera would go up to that level, so what would happen to him is that he would go become too into the Ruchnias, and then his physical existence would cease to exist, meaning that he would more or less die, right? So that's what happened. Reb Zera sort of he died because he lost that control of being rooted down in this world. He was just too much into the Ruchnias. So then Rabbi Davin and then Reb Zera was able to come back and be spiritual level. That's the word from the Divrei Chesed. I saw that the Ben Ishchai also says this in Ben Yoyod B'Shem in the name of anonymous Kabbalists. He didn't say who they were, but he brings the same shot. And he says,
I like that one, because it's based on the
Gemara.
It's like the Diok in the words.
So the Ben Ishchai adds, he says it's also been taken, I guess, from the end of the Gemara. The end of the Gemara says that, so the next year, Rabbi invited Reb Zera over again. Right? So what did Reb Zera say? He said, no, I can't come because maybe there's not going to be a nace. Maybe you're going to come and kill me again, and next year I'm not going to have a nace like I did last year. Right? So the Ben Ishchai says, I don't understand. That's what you're worried about? Fine, so go hire bodyguards and make sure that he doesn't kill you again, and then you'll be okay. What's bothering you? Just make sure that he doesn't... So he says, but if the idea is that it was some sort of spiritual experience that Rabba was involved in, and he pulled Reb Zera along with him, so a bodyguard is not gonna help for that. It's the whole experience of the Suda of being at the table with Rabba that's what caused Reb Zera to die. So he says that he brings this as another raya to that idea of the pshat. The Maral also says the similar thing in Chedushim Maral in Megillah Daf Zayin and Beis. The Maral says the idea of drinking extensively in Purim, so that when a person drinks a lot, so he's dulling his physical senses. When he's doing it, he's trying to show that my physical senses are bottled. They're not important. They don't exist. I'm trying to show that I'm kulei l'Hashem, and I want to do what Hashem wants me to do, and I'm giving up everything else and trying to tap into the will of Hashem. Mezer Hashem, we'll be able to get to that experience in Purim, and not use Purim as simply a means or an excuse to do what people do like to do on the street, and they don't have an excuse to do that the whole year round. They have Purim to do as an excuse. No, the idea of Purim is the exact opposite of that. The idea of Purim is to bring yourself to a higher level than the rest of the year, not to bring yourself to a lower level.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why are people so bothered about that fact that Rabbi Shechem, Rabbi Zera, and when it comes to Rabbi Yochanan, I don't see anyone asking, about anything.
The story of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Kana.
No, Rabbi Kana, also like Rish Lakish and a few other people there.
He looked at them and they died.
Yeah. Why is it so?
It could be because the mashmaus of the Gemara is that he killed him because he was drunk.
Mm-hmm.
So the stories of Rabbi Yochanan is like those people they slighted Rabbi Yochanan's covered or something like that. So they acted improperly. So we can understand to some extent that they deserve to get whatever initially came to them. But here it's not like they were just like having a poor so then like one guy came got up and killed the other guy. It's like it's more. I hear your question. I don't know. All right, I'll go to the bottom.